This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
It will generally affect financial markets and in turn impact commodity prices and exchange rate. But it's very early days.
That's economist Lara Hodes on the possible impact of the coronavirus on the South African economy. Details coming up. And also, Burkina Faso says as many as 30 people were killed in an attack on a village by suspected Islamist extremists. And motorcycle taxis will be banned from much of Nigeria's economic capital, Lagos, effective next month. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. A top story, South African officials say they're ready for the possible spread of the coronavirus to African shores. So far, no confirmed cases have been reported on the continent in the epidemic that started in China and has killed at least 106 people. But in Africa's largest economic hub, preparations and concerns are in the air. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The pneumonia-like virus, which has sickened more than 4,500 people in China since it was identified in the city of Wuhan on December 31st, has African governments on alert. South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases says the nation is taking precautions at the continent's busiest airport in Johannesburg. Professor Cheryl Cohn.
We have noted the four cases of novel coronavirus that have recently been confirmed in Australia. These were anticipated due to the proximity of Australia to Asia. We would like to assure South Africans that South Africa is prepared for an eventuality of an outbreak. We have put in place systems to rapidly identify, detect, and respond to any imported cases that may reach our borders.
Some 21 million travelers came through Johannesburg's O.R. Tambo International Airport in 2018. It is the only airport in South Africa with direct flights to and from China. The airport has previously implemented temperature testing and health screening during previous outbreaks of Ebola, Zika, and other viruses. But although no one is sick yet, says economist Laura Hodes of Investec Bank, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange has slumped as news of the outbreak has spread. China is South Africa's biggest trading partner. That is normal, says Hodes. One study showed that the 2002 SARS epidemic cost global markets as much as $40 billion.
So it's definitely had an effect, a mild effect. The JSE has been down. You know, it will generally affect financial markets and in turn impact commodity prices and exchange rate. But it's very early days. And there is a lot of hype around it because of, you know, SARS. A few years ago, people are worried to the extent it will spread. But I think it's more a wait and see.
Hodes called the situation a wait and see, both in terms of the economy and the virus. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Police in South Africa have started raiding locations in the Diepsloot township in Johannesburg, after local residents took to the streets demanding that undocumented foreign nationals leave. However, migrants' organizations say the raids have been marred by police brutality and indiscriminate arrests, including arrests of migrants in the country legally. Also, migrants say a message circulating on social media has warned undocumented migrants in other townships to pack up and leave. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Hundreds of foreign nationals allegedly to be in the country illegally have been arrested in Diepsloot over the past 2 days. Some have reportedly fled to other areas to avoid arrest. Residents recently took to the Diepsloot streets following the murders of a police officer and 2 residents, allegedly by Zimbabwean nationals. After protesters trashed the streets, blocked roads and vowed not to stop until all undocumented foreigners leave, Police Minister Pekicele visited the township. He immediately deployed close to 100 police officers.
make sure that our roads, our streets are safe by increasing the number of the police and increase the special unit called AMAPARET Technical Response Team to make that visibility to be there in 24 hours.
The Minister of Home Affairs, Aaron Motsoaledi, made comments that left many foreign nationals accusing him of fueling xenophobic violence.
Just this Tuesday, I signed a list of 1,550 illegal people who came into the country. They've served jail terms for murder, rape, etc. And I've signed documents to send them back home. Because they are not migrants, they are criminals.
The government action has angered immigrant rights groups. Zaza Kebashe is with the African Diaspora Forum.
What they are doing is in no way lawful, because amidst the people that they've arrested there is migrants with documents. It's very brutal towards migrants in this country. And how do they see a legal migrant? Because they are not trained in migration law, they trained in criminal law.
Other rights defenders also say the police aid by rounding up immigrants without proper investigations to verify if they are responsible for any alleged crimes. However, one community leader, Lifankala, welcomed the raids, saying it is almost impossible to track down the undocumented migrants when they commit crime.
Majority of people who were arrested, who were in touch with the station commander, were told that majority of them indeed are undocumented migrants or immigrants. So we are very much happy about that. So we'll be working hand in hand with the police, because what we want to see happening ultimately is a peaceful community.
South Africa has seen sporadic outbursts of anti-foreigner violence over the past several years. Some South Africans blame foreigners for the country's unemployment rate of about 30% and its economic slump. While the raids continue in dispute, residents of River Park Township have warned undocumented migrants to leave the area by the end of the day Wednesday. This has left many foreigners in the country worried that another wave of xenophobic violence could break out. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Authorities in the Western African nation of Burkina Faso say as many as 30 people were killed in an attack on a village by suspected Islamist extremists. Saturday's attack on the northern village of Siligaji in Soum province occurred days after attacks on two villages killed 32 civilians. The impoverished country has been plagued by attacks by militant forces from neighboring Mali and Niger since 2015 that have left hundreds dead and displaced more than 500,000 civilians, despite a large presence of French and U.S. forces, as well as a 13,000-strong United Nations peacekeeping force. The Gambia Press Union is rejecting government allegations that several journalists were inciting violence. Police arrested the journalists and authorities shut down two private radio stations after a large demonstration demanding that President Adama Barrow resign. Panderambai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The relationship between President Adama Barrow's government and the private Gambian media has been warm and cordial until this past weekend. Five journalists have been arrested and two private radio stations shut down following a bloody protest march organized by a press group called 3 Years Jotna. The group wants Barrow to respect his campaign promise of running a 3-year transitional government. Sekou Djame is an official in the Gambia Press Union.
The past 24 hours actually witnessed the most aggressive attack on press freedom since this new government assumed office in 2017. Between 12 noon and 2 p.m., Modu Bojang was taken away from the studio by the police. And although the authorities have refused to confirm his whereabouts to us.
Police on Sunday used tear gas to break up the 3 years Jotna protest and arrested at least 137 demonstrators. Several members of the security forces and protesters were injured in the crackdown. The government suspended licenses for the Brikama-based Home Digital FM and the King FM radio station. The government says The two stations were inciting violence, an allegation the press union rejects. The government has banned the 3 years journal movement after branding it as subversive, illegal, and violent movement. It says the group was never registered in the Gambia. The government has warned citizens, including the media, to break ties with the group and risk legal penalty if they do not. James says the order is wrong.
Equally, the proclamation contained in yesterday's press release, which appeared to warn journalists against presenting divergent views on the 3 years Jotna issue, is as dangerous as it is unlawful. It has no legitimate basis, and therefore we call on the media to disregard it and present diverse opinions as possible on this issue of legitimate interest.
Barrow was elected in 2016, ending more than 2 decades of repressive rule under President Yahya Jammeh. An opposition coalition selected Barrow as their candidate, and in return, he said he would step down after 3 years instead of the normal 5-year term. However, he has since said he will serve the full 5 years, prompting protests. Alhaji Seka is a Gambian cab driver living in New York City in the United States and the owner of the closed King FM radio. His station manager, Jibril Jallo, and 3 other staffers were arrested. He tells VOA that his station was closed without any formal warning from the government.
I think there has to be a normal communication, a channel of communication, because the government, they could have write to me and tell me what was going on in my radio station, but they haven't done that. So they just went and closed the radio station. My advice to them is that let them not try to suppress people's opinion.
Seka denies the government's allegations about the station. He says it was never involved in any form of incitement or violence. He in turn accuses the government of muscling the press and killing private investment.
I was trying to help them because the government cannot give them jobs, and I created that station for them. And thank God, I have 17 Gambian people working in that radio station, and all of them, they are making salaries every month.
The press union has called on the government to release the detained journalists and reopen the radio stations. Amnesty International says the crackdown on the protesters has alarming echoes of Gambia's brutal past. It says no one should face arrest for simply exercising their human rights to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. For VOA Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Lagos is banning motorcycle taxis from much of Nigeria's economic capital effective next month due to scary figures for fatal accidents and general chaos and disorderliness. The order, which takes effect February 1st, will be applied to the two-wheelers known as okadas and three-wheelers kikis. They will be banned from key bridges and highways, the business districts of Victoria Island and Lagos Island, Apapa, where the primary port is located, and Ikaja, home of the international airport. It is unclear what will replace the vehicles to ease the notorious traffic jams in Lagos or what the drivers will be able to find as replacements for their income. Ride-hailing startups are waiting for to hear how they will be affected. The initial word was that only courier services companies will be exempt. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. South African officials say they are ready for the possible spread of the coronavirus to African shores. Burkina Faso says as many as 30 people were killed in an attack on a village by suspected Islamic extremists. And Lagos is banning motorcycle taxis from much of Nigeria's economic capital, Lagos, effective next month. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Villagers in Cameroon's volatile northwest region are fleeing to neighboring Nigeria to escape separatist violence ahead of the February 9th local and parliamentary elections. The rebels have vowed to stop the elections and are clashing with the military while civilians are caught up in the fighting. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from the border village of Ata in Taraba State, Nigeria.
Christians at True Faith Ministries in the Nigerian border village of Ata sing for God to protect them. 47-year-old Pastor Innocent Okoli says more than 70 of them are Cameroonians who fled increased violence ahead of February 9 elections. He says they crossed the border about 40 kilometers or 29 miles away in the past 2 weeks to escape clashes between Cameroon's military and rebels.
These are Christians with very different experiences. You have Christians who are yet to trace their loved ones. You have many separated children in the church. You have so many unaccompanied children. You know, you cannot just minister to them the word without helping them to get food to eat and then find something to do.
A majority of the Cameroonians are women and children. 18-year-old Regina Shane Najela says she and her younger brother joined a group of women to flee from Cameroon's border village of Ngarum after security clashed with rebels known as Amber Boys.
The Amber Boys entered the quarter, so the policemen came shooting all over. We ran, we slept in the bush. My mother said that she would look for a way. Then I'm here with my junior brother. Before we left there, they burned our house.
Aid group Positive Youth Africa has been providing relief material to Cameroonians fleeing the fighting to Ata. Aid worker Franca Ma'i Sulem Young says it is difficult to estimate how many people have crossed from Cameroon to Nigeria in recent weeks because border villages are difficult to access. But Ibrahim Mustafa, a community leader of the Mamilas ethnic group in Nigeria's Taraba State, says they have received over 300 Cameroonians in the past 2 weeks. The latest violence comes as Cameroon authorities try to hold local council and parliamentary elections in the troubled north and southwest regions. President Paul Biya has insisted the elections will take place and ordered the military to kill all rebels who refuse to surrender. Unrest broke out in Cameroon's English-speaking regions in 2016 when teachers and lawyers protested the dominance of the French language and French-speaking officials. Rebels took up arms a year later, demanding a separate English-speaking state they call Ambazonia. The conflict with Cameroon's military since then has killed about 3,000 people, many of them villagers caught up in the fighting. The United Nations reports that at least 50,000 Cameroonians have fled the fighting to Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Ata, Nigeria.
A Zimbabwe Supreme Court judgment in a civil case between two companies is causing a furor over its implications for the country's ability to attract investment and develop local businesses. Adigando gives us more on the story.
This week in Harare, the Supreme Court ruled that a company could use the Zimbabwe currency, the RTGS, to pay a US dollar debt. Business leaders and economists say the ruling confirms the government's stand that the RTGS dollar will convert one-to-one against the US dollar, despite large differences in market value. In 2018, mining operations company NR Baba Limited won a lawsuit against Zambezi Gas Private Limited for a debt of US$3.885,000. Zambezi paid RTGS $4,136,806 to settle the debt. And Arababa went to court because under the interbank market rate at the time, it equaled just US$144,788. Zambezi Gas ultimately appealed to the Supreme Court, which last week overturned the lower court's decision. Alex Magaisa is a legal analyst in Zimbabwe. He says that dated in US dollars, but it will hurt creditors because $1 million in RTGS is worth much less than US $1 million.
It's a boon for debtors, people who owed. They will be happy because they have to pay very low amounts compared to what they should have paid. But of course, it's a nightmare for creditors and anybody who was owed money as at 22 February 2019. As for the environment, it's a disaster for Zimbabwe because it means that the economic environment is uncertain. It also creates a moral hazard, you know, for those who borrow money. The lack of protection by the courts, I think, will be seen in a very negative light by those who are looking at Zimbabwe.
For several years, Zimbabwe used several currencies, including the US dollar and South Africa's rand. Early last year, the government banned use of foreign currencies for most transactions and required use of the RTGS. Several international currency market tracking firms show that one US dollar buys between 10 and 16 Zimbabwe RTGS dollars. The past president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, Felani Jawabwe, says the court's decision may be especially damaging for financial institutions.
One of the concerns, especially an institution that provides funding to Zimbabwe is involved, to gain our reputation as a home for capital. We hope that there are cases that will be taken on a case-by-case basis. We have to be concerned.
Jawengo sees delinquent debtors taking advantage of the judgment to dodge their obligations.
It's about value. When you enter into a transaction, it's about value. Are you also now paying me the equivalent of value? And when you take the interpretation of value, I must be able to do what I wanted to do with the money that you are going to give me.
Kutsakapulu is a lawyer, member of parliament, and the opposition MDC secretary for constitutional affairs. He says his legal practice already has handled cases in which debtors tried to pay US dollar debts with the Zimbabwe currency.
With Zimbabwe, a lot of cases of a similar nature I've had where people have been debating this. The significance of this judgment is that it's a Supreme Court judgment. A Supreme Court judgment can't bind the law. The judgment itself is correct at law, in my reading of it. I think the judges are merely interpreting what the law says. If you want to blame anyone, blame the lawmaker. The law is bad. A lot of people have lost their property. It has eroded people's private property.
Pulu says, although the matter is now legally settled, it will chase away investors and blames the ruling ZANU-PF majority in the legislature.
We're now an uncertain investment destination. But if you read the answers, you will see that we debated as MDC bitterly against this kind of laws being passed. This case is an example of the abuse of the majority in Parliament. So they always pass without thinking. So we have an unthinking majority. They just pass laws. They don't consider the effects of the laws on the economy, on people's private property.
Pulu says the opposition has opposed passage of laws that allow converting US dollar debt. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, sub-Saharan African nations continue to struggle with their anti-corruption efforts. Corruption on the continent, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Buckley, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Stand up!